Tech meeting. If everyone would take a seat on their own, it would be greatly appreciated, but we have people that can help you with that, if necessary. Okay. Secretary, call the roll. Establish a quorum, please. Why don't we start with the pledge, and I'll ask Director Du Bois to do that, and then we'll go to the agenda. I didn't give you any briefing notes or anything. So.
No, I know. Thing is, I can remember this. So.
All right, any public comment at the beginning of this glorious day? No, okay. On 3132? Okay. In that case, Mr. Chief Executive Officer, substitute, but actually knows what's going on.
I just got back into the world, but I have notes.
Okay.
And the best news today is that the 36th Annual Metro Bus Rodeo will be held this Saturday at Santa Anita Racetrack. Yeehaw. Particulars on that, should you be interested. Further, the 10th Annual Mobility 21 proud in the event's history. Chairman Villaraigosa provided a special welcome to Directors Jaroslawski, Du Bois, O'Connor, Kat, and Katz, as well as the CEO and staff participated in a number of breakout sessions. The Metro Green Line to LAX is in the process of community workshops, and over 200 stakeholders attended the workshops that were held. That the formal public scoping meetings for the environmental review process will be held later this fall. Finally, the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor Project open house. Last night, we hosted a Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor Project open house, the final one before the final. The purpose is to update the community on key elements. The document was approved for release by the Federal Transit Administration, and it's available on the project's website. Elected officials, leadership council members, and Mr. Chairman, that completes my report.
That was the part that got picked up on the mic. thanks. Chief Communications Officer, Matt. Can I keep this? Maybe Mitchell.
Good morning. The focus on my presentation today is going to be on TAP. Just so you guys know, TAP is now the largest regional smart card system in the country, especially bus-based. To give you an idea of the complexity, we have over 650 products that are loaded onto the TAP system right now. And most recently, we introduced rolling passes last month, which went over very successfully, and day passes, which we're selling on board buses. And sales are actually up 21% on the day passes, so everything very positive in that. Another thing that's happening is Access Services is about to launch their dual TAP system. And they've been working very diligently to get that out up and running. I think they're starting out with 15,000 tests. And this is the first program of this type in the country, so that's pretty amazing. The thing I want to focus on today is we're right about to embark on testing locked gates. And so Jane Matsumoto is here today to give you an overview of our approach and how we're going to do that.
Good morning. At the board's direction, we have been exploring opportunities to begin analyzing steps to gate our gated stations, recognizing that not 100% of our fare media has been converted to TAP. We are looking to determine the magnitude of impacts to So we've established some success criteria and metrics to affect this. Our goals are to really observe how the lock gates will affect our customers and monitor the change in percentage of tap and non-tap patrons. The metrics will determine the percentage of change in our tap and paper usage at these gates. Our success criteria will determine the safe and effective locking and unlocking of gated stations, effectively assisting our patrons through these gates and collecting the necessary data to migrate in the future. The stations that were selected for these testing purposes are Wilshire Normandy, Vermont Beverly, Wilshire Western, and Hollywood Western. And these stations were chosen primarily upon the fact that they have only single entrances, they have single gate arrays, they are very conducive to enabling staff to assist our customers. They are essentially low to medium ridership stations, and we expect that there should be, in comparison to other stations, low percentage of non-tap fare media. This bar graph attempts to show the four stations and what is happening on a given day of each of these four stations. The longest bar represents those patrons that are entering our stations and are not tapping, but are counted through the concession lights. The lilac-colored blue shorter bar are those patrons who are actually tapping through the gates. The white bar are subsets of the purple bar, customers who are cash customers buying paper fare media. This is Wilshire Normandy on that same day over a 24-hour period. The highest spikes are obviously seen during peak hours in the morning and in the evening. The larger taps are witnessed by those patrons we anticipate are commuters, daily commuters. This station, Vermont and Beverly, shows that throughout the course of the 24 hours, very few patrons are tapping. There are many, many patrons entering through the gates where we are not able to quantify what kind of fare media are being used by these riders. This is Hollywood and Western. Again, the peaks are, the highest bars are at peak hours. We have many commuters here on tap. Evidenced by the lilac bars. And Wilshire Western, again, preponderance of riders who are not tapping, but lilac bars showing likely pass holders. So this is on the left column, you will see the various line items representing the metrics that we will be collecting over these dates. September 14th is just a dry run, and we begin our actual testing on the 28th and the 3 weeks in October. The gates will be locked each Wednesday for four consecutive weeks from 1 to 4 p.m. each week, and we have various stakeholder departments who will be assisting us. The Sheriff's Department will help direct our patrons. Revenue staff, rail operations are all involved, as are marketing, to ensure that we have good control of these stations. And this is just a representative of what each station will undergo as our riders come down from our escalators and stairs. Sheriffs will be posted at the foot of these stairs to segregate the three different types of customers that we are anticipating, either cash riders, paper pass holder riders, or tap riders. The paper riders will be assisted through the gates. Cash riders will be assisted at the ticket vending machines, and tap riders will be helped through the gates. Our path forward is to continue to work towards identifying those customers with paper passes, ensuring that our ticket vending machine, one-way and day passes are converted to tap, assisting our K-12 students to get tap cards in their hands. As Matt mentioned, we have worked with ASI to get their patrons converted to tap, working on tokens, and noting that Both Metrolink, EasyPass, as well as the Muni 2 Metro transfers represent the largest demographic of riders that have not yet been converted to TAP, and we will attempt to quantify those riders. And that concludes our presentation.
I know that I need to say this just because Vivian's here, but we'll put together a meeting between Metrolink staff and myself and some of the folks over here, Art and Paul and Matt and whoever is appropriate, so we can figure out a way to do this that accommodates both our riders. I know we have 4,000 or 6,000 people. I can't remember which transfer from our system to from the Metrolink system to the MTA system, and clearly we've got to figure out a way to accommodate them. Or just not have gates. But anyhow, I said that again, didn't I? But thank you, Kimberly. Moving forward on this, but we'll try and figure that out, Matt, because I know there's, you know, Metro's made an incredible investment in these gates. We don't figure out how we can use it. Thank you. You're welcome for that. and letting go of it too. You know, that was the best part. But we need to figure out how to make it work. And, you know, I guess the sad thing, or the unfortunate thing for all of us, is, you know, electronics changes so quickly that Crystal Ball a bunch of years ago may not have gone that route, but we did go it. How do we make it work, and how do we get some money back out of that investment? So, Matt, I'll work with you and with the CEO's office, and we'll put that meeting together in the next week or two.
Okay, great.
Vivian, next week or two. All right? Okay, thanks. Anybody else on the communications officer report?
If I need to get anything from Vivian, can I ask you to talk a little bit?
I'm just doing this to keep her off both our backs right now. So, but yeah. All right, Matt, we'll do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. The federal state report. Oral federal state report. It just doesn't sound right. Marissa, how's Rafi doing? How's the family doing? They doing all right? Yeah, please give them our regards.
Good morning, Chairman Katz and members of the Executive Management Committee. I'm Marissa Yeager from Metro Government Relations Federal Affairs. I'm pleased to provide an update on several federal transportation issues that impact our agency. As we have shared this week in some of the legislative alerts, a number of legislative actions have occurred for which I would like to provide a brief explanation. I will focus in on a number of these topics and then will be pleased to answer any questions you may have on these issues. First, President Obama unveiled this past Monday the legislative text for the American Jobs Act bill, which has been forwarded to Congress. The bill still needs to be formally introduced in the House. However, it has been introduced in the Senate by Senator Reid, and we will be forwarding that to all of our board members immediately after this committee. This bill allocates $60 billion for transportation infrastructure with a separate entity via direct and secured loans. In addition, the additional $50 billion will be immediately allocated to transportation needs and divided in the following categories: $27 billion for highway refurbishment, passenger and freight rail, and this is distributed through a formula; $6 billion in capital projects to modernize fixed guideway systems and to replace and rehabilitate bus and bus facilities; $5 billion in competitive grants across all modes with significant national or regional impact, similar to TIGER program; $4 billion to improve intercity passenger rail and to develop new high-speed passenger rail corridors; $3 billion for transit capital projects with a particular emphasis on new buses and existing bus and rail rehabilitation; $2 billion for Amtrak capital improvements; $2 billion for airport improvement grants; $1 billion for transition to a satellite air traffic control system. This is very similar to the ARRA program when it was first rolled out, so how the formula dollars and the discretionary funds will be distributed will be a combination both to state DOTs as well as metropolitan planning organizations and through the urbanized area formula.
If it was adopted.
If adopted is accurate. So this morning, Senator Reid read for the second time on the Senate floor, so we are anticipating it going to possibly all Senate committee, but we will let you know as this legislation moves forward.
Okay.
Second, the Metro's federal team is watching very closely the debate on the surface transportation extension, which is set to expire on September 30th. The latest FAA extension is slated to expire September 16th. The House of Representatives this week did pass H.R. 2887, which combines the Federal Aviation Administration and the Surface Transportation Extension. It was passed by a voice vote. The Surface Transportation Authorization would be extended through March 31st, 2012, at existing 2011 funding levels, which is approximately $24.78 billion. Also included in this bill is the extension of the federal gas tax, which was set to expire September 30th. However, at this time, this bill is currently being held up in the Senate by Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma. The senator is not allowing a voice vote on this action because of the mandated 10% spending on enhancements such as bike paths and pedestrian trails. We are continuing to also press with all the authorization committees and finance committees in the House and Senate on all of our components as it relates to our existing America Fast Forward initiative. Finally, regarding appropriations for fiscal year 2012, the House Committee on Subcommittee on Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development did hold a markup last week. $55.15 billion in discretionary spending was included in this bill. It's nearly $20 billion less than the amount outlined in President Obama's fiscal year 2012 budget release this past February. This spending bill will provide just under $7 billion for transit funding. That includes both bus and rail, and $27 billion for highway programs. Of concern to staff is the language in the subcommittee bill, which includes the prohibition for Federal Transit Administration from entering into a full funding grant agreement that provides more than 50% federal share. In addition, the following programs were also zeroed out of funding: the Tiger Grant Program, high-speed and intercity rail passenger, as well as the National Infrastructure Bank. The full House Appropriations Committee has not scheduled a vote at this time on this bill, nor has the Senate Appropriations Committee moved forward on their respective bill. Metro staff has been working closely with all of them and advocating for our New Starts program priorities for both the West Side Extension and the Regional Connector, but at this time, there is no action. Okay. However, should there be no congressional action, there is work at this time by House Appropriations Committee Chairman Harold Hal Reeds from Kentucky. He has introduced HJ Resolution 79, which is continuing resolution funding to fund the federal government program through the end of the fiscal year, which ends in September 30th, and the funding would then be extended to November 18th, 2011, and that was just introduced late yesterday.
So the House has passed a clean reauthorization extension. The Senate hasn't acted yet.
Correct.
So we're waiting on those two.
And the appropriation still has not moved. They've only addressed one of the 12 appropriation bills at this time.
And the FAA deadline is the one that expires first.
Correct. So it expires midnight tomorrow.
So they have to pass that. But so correct. The thought is the extensions will pass. And all the good news out of that, in a sense, is that it's status quo for 6 months.
Right.
Which the House Republicans have wanted to cut by 30% what was spent. So that's the good news, I guess. And Boxer and Micah are still talking and still working, and Boxer's sense was that by waiting till next year, that would give time to do – she's going to try and do a full reauthorization bill, which is why we're all involved with that, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
And final matter, just to alert the board – we are monitoring any legislative movement to extend the CNG tax credit issue, which is set to expire in December. As you may not know, Metro receives approximately $30 million per year for this program. So our internal staff are definitely anticipating, should this not be extended, we would then look to move to request an extension or a new bill next year.
Okay. Any questions for Marissa? Public comment on the federal report. You got to fill out, sir, if you want to.
I just wanted to correct one.
Come on down and we'll figure. Marissa doesn't make many mistakes, so, or any, I think, she told me.
Technicality. So the transportation enhancements is only 2%. Of the bill, actually.
Identify yourself.
This is Ryan Wiggins from Transportation for America.
Right.
So the transportation enhancements is only 2% of the overall federal funds. Senator Tom Coburn and some of his people who are supporting the stripping of this provision actually believe it's 10%. It's just very poor math. So it's actually a very small amount of the program, which would actually hold up the extension of the FAA, put 80,000 workers out of work immediately beginning Friday, and then jeopardize the extension of the transportation bill at the end of September.
Thanks. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Marissa. Michael?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. The legislature recently concluded their business for this year's session. I'd like to touch on a number of measures that were considered in the final weeks of session, the status of the budget, and bond funding for transportation projects.
Michael, also address whatever you've heard or know about Lockyer's fall bond sale, please. Okay, thanks.
Yep. As with any end of year session, there are many last minute amendments to bills, outside of some of the obvious ones, which were much discussed in the press. There were a number of bills that we dealt with this year. I should note that this year seemed to mark an unusual year, and it seemed to be a lot more last minute amendments than we've seen in the past. But anyway, the first bill I want to talk about was SB 791 by Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg. This bill would have authorized regional agencies to implement a fee on gasoline sales. A similar proposal was discussed when the legislature restructured transportation funding last year, but that measure was ultimately not pursued. The fee, while not specifically tied to SB 375, was viewed as an implementation measure for the bill. But like I said, it was not specifically linked to anything in SB 375. The sponsors of the fee bill were also the sponsors of SB 375, and they had mentioned throughout this year that they expected to introduce legislation. However, they never did so until the last week of session. Throughout the year, the sponsors did ask us for our input, and what we told them at that time was that if you introduce a bill, that the fee in Southern California should be implemented by the county transportation commissions rather than SCAG, and they had committed to including that language. However, a bill wasn't put in print until the last week. Nobody saw that language until the last week, and it was just not really enough time to develop consensus. There were a lot of questions and concerns that were raised about the bill, and they ultimately didn't pursue it. However, the sponsors have indicated that they plan to introduce the legislation again next year. Legislation was also introduced to address attempts by some groups in California who are seeking to ban the use of project labor agreements. Organized efforts are underway to seek approval in cities throughout California to adopt ordinances banning project labor agreements. SB 922 would prohibit cities, counties, and local agencies from banning PLAs and would restrict their funding should they adopt such ordinances. This measure passed the legislature and is pending in the governor's office. Additionally, the professional engineers in California government sought legislation that would have severely restricted the use of design, build, and public-private partnerships. Legislation was also introduced in the last week of session, although rumors of its existence were circulating throughout the year. A groundswell of opposition arose quite quickly, in fact, in one day, and the sponsors agreed to pull the legislation from consideration. However, they have stated that they will also return next year. This legislation is important to Metro because the use of P3s and design build is critical to the implementation of our accelerated highway program in particular. Our legislative program seeks to maintain the broad authority that exists in law now. Additionally, staff has worked very cooperatively with the Foothill Extension and the Metro Goal Line to address the statute governing board composition at that agency. This matter is important to both our agencies, and we are pleased that through a very constructive and cooperative effort, we have moved legislation to the governor's desk with very little opposition. Also during the session, a number of bills were proposed relative to the high-speed rail project. While many of these ultimately did not pass, I did want to highlight one that did. Bill is AB 615, which restores funding for preliminary studies of the Los Angeles to San Diego segment. The budget adopted by the legislature did not include funds for these activities, and AB 615 seeks to restore those funds. Lastly, I'll touch on the status of the bond sale and funding for our projects. Just as a reminder, the budget adopted by the legislature relied on cash that Caltrans currently has on hand and a smaller fall bond sale to manage the cash flow of projects for the budget year. Recently, the CTC received a report from Caltrans that they would make available $200 million for the transit category of Proposition 1B. That action was significant for Los Angeles, since transit agencies here have essentially been owed about $99 million. Metro's share of that is about $90 million. The other nine goes to the municipal operators. Additionally, the CTC has been able to fund the congestion mitigation projects from Proposition 1B. The key project here for us includes the 405 HOV lane and improvements to the I-5 in both southern and northern Los Angeles County. This is an ongoing challenge and will continue to be a high priority. The next set of projects to be funded in the goods movement is the goods movement category from Proposition 1B. And Caltrans and the CTC are working with our staff, and we can expect that next year's budget will also have to address that category. And for us, that includes things like improvements around the ports and the Alameda Quarter East project. Now, that's sort of general, the specifics of where things stand with the bond sales. We're sort of working through this step by step with the legislature and the treasurer's office. The treasurer recently engaged in a sale of the temporary borrowing notes that the state does, and that was a relatively successful sale. The fall bond sale for transportation is going to be smaller, primarily because they're relying on cash that Caltrans has from previous bond sales. But what that essentially means is that it puts more reliance on the spring sale next year and then the fall sale after that. We think, you know, this is almost a category by category effort through the proposition. I mean, Proposition 1B was set up so it has different categories. The biggest ones were the congestion relief projects, the goods movement projects, and the transit projects. And the Caltrans thinks they have enough for the congestion relief projects to keep those going. The transit projects were sort of limping through, but I think the next challenge for us will be on the goods movement projects, because a lot of those will be coming due next year, and they will come for bond sales at about the same time that the state has to sell bonds for the high-speed rail project. So I think that'll be the particular challenge next year. And that concludes my report.
Any other comments on the state, other than the state of the state is
broke?
Broke is one word for it. Confused is another word for it.
Financially broke.
There's a number. Michael, do they go back in session before the triggers, you think? As I can tell, the budget's not gaining a lot of money these days. So
the budget, yeah, the budget is set up so that the FY12 budget is set up. Is balanced based on the anticipation of $4 billion in additional revenue. That additional revenue has not materialized in the months since the budget has been adopted, so they're behind. There was an effort.
Hey, Michael, could I ask everybody to keep your conversations just to a dull roar, just down a little bit? I mean, people are going to have them, that's fine, but just keep it down a little bit, please.
There was an effort at the end of session to reconsider the triggers. The governor indicated that he would veto that legislation, so the triggers as they exist right now stay. For us, that's relatively good news, because none of the transportation programs are directly affected by the triggers. For example, the main thing we're looking at with that is the STA account, which funds our operations. So that is not identified as one of the cuts that will be made with the triggers. But what we're basically up against is just a big slowdown. And we've seen a continual erosion of transportation funds. We're constantly having to battle for bond sales. And that's just a different dynamic based on the state's fiscal condition.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard some talk that they want to come. There's some talk from Steinberg about coming back in and redoing the CEQA bill to include things like mass transit, which would have been nice to have called out. And,
yes.
I mean, the legislature doesn't build a streamlined CEQA, and covers a whole bunch of the private sector, but while they're doing it, can't bother to include mass transit, which makes absolutely no sense. That would have given them good cover for the other stuff they were doing.
That was AB 900, and that was, again, another bill that was amended very late, and we reached out to a number of members in the legislature who have indicated their willingness to come back and reconsider that measure. I think there are also some other structural issues with that measure that may cause reconsideration separate from the transit issue.
Yeah, but it actually makes 375 look understandable.
Yes. And there were a number of members that spoke on the floor in support of that, so we're going to be going back to each of them.
Right, and Mike Fears already, I ran to him over the weekend, and he told me that, you know, he had made some comments on the floor, as had others, about the transit piece, and that he's more than happy to take up that cause. So, you know, Mike has been very good for us on a lot of things.
We'll be knocking on his door.
All right. Thank you much. Item 30. Marissa, don't go far. You want me to do it, or do you want?
No, I'm happy to start it. The conversation. Currently, federal procurement regulation law do not permit agencies like Metro to require bidders to establish local hiring or purchasing programs to take programs like local hiring directly into account when the bid and evaluation processes occur. Currently, with all the local investment that's occurring with Measure R and from our taxpayers here in LA County, there has been conversations taking place, and we would like to actually get approval from the board to continue those conversations as an official part of the America Fast Forward initiative as we move forward. There's a lot of conversations that are occurring on the federal level that we would like to be part of. And so at this point, this effort is to request to the board and approve that we add an additional component to the America Fast Forward initiative, a change in federal law and or regulation to permit transportation agencies that commit to paying over half of the given project's budget with non-federal funds to require contractors.
Yeah, basically, thank you, Marissa. Basically, the mayor proposed this, and it's got some good traction. The last time I was in D.C. 2 weeks ago, and he was there last week. The idea basically being that taxpayers who pay for all this stuff ought to have a shot at getting some of the contracts as well. And so, you know, you're not allowed under federal law the way it exists today to geographically designate, which we'll get to when we deal with the PLA in a couple minutes. But there's sort of two paths here. The PLA approach is one. The other would be to for the feds to sort of acknowledge that if we're putting up 70% or 80% of the money, we ought to have some control over where we buy goods and services and who we employ at that same level. So,
correct.
Right. And this is, do you need an approval, a motion on to add that into AFF?
Please.
Okay. I have a motion by Yaroslavsky and a second by Mrs. Dubois.
Whatever.
By Diane, the woman on my right, without objection. Any comments, public members? All right, without objection, that motion will be passed, and we'll move on to item 31, which is – actually, hang on one sec. Let's go to item 32 right now, please. Let's do item 32 first. On item 32.
Yeah. Item 32 is a recommendation to change station and property names at Metro Rail stations and transit centers. We broke out each item A through G to give the committee and the board ultimate flexibility in terms of naming. Some important notes on this. This action designates the future name of the station. It does not apply funding for that station. We'll either seek out funding as we move forward, or there's also economies of scale with regard to the timing of when we implement the various station names if they are approved. The list is provided. I can go through it with you or answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Chair, move approval.
Move approval? Yeah. And a second by Mr. Yaroslavsky. We have a motion. I have public comment. Kimberly Richards. Item 32.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
Oh, freak.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Directors. Kimberly Richards, Chair of the Metro San Fernando Valley Service Council. I'll be brief. Staff did solicit my input on this, and so I have reviewed the list. The items that are before you are the ones that made sense, and staff took all the ones out that didn't make sense, and so I heartily support this final list for approval. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments? Any objections from the panel? Without objections, all members present being aye votes. Four members present. The motion is approved. It was a motion by DuBois, second by Yaroslavsky. Okay, let's go back to item 31. Item 31. Oh, goody.
Good morning.
Hi.
Would you like a staff presentation? Or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Staff, what I want to do is, because I've got some time constraints we're dealing with for some of the committee members, so let's do the presentation. We'll do public comment, and then we'll do...
Motion.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make the staff presentation brief. You have the board report in front of you. This is, of course, the... recommendation to approve negotiation principles for a construction careers policy and a project labor agreement. The staff recommendation is asking you to approve the attached principles for inclusion in what we'll call the CCP and the PLA, to authorize staff to negotiate with the LA County, Orange County Building Trade Councils, and to amend the FY12 budget to add three FTEs to perform the implementation of the CCP and PLA specifically for the Crenshaw project, which is our first project that will be coming up with contractual and construction. The board report includes a discussion of PLAs, advantages, controversy, comments from the TBAC and small business community, discussion of the impacts on P3, a comparison to other public agencies, resources required to implement, maps, and I have put colored maps in front of you so it's a little easier for you to see where the high unemployment zip codes are and the areas of the project alignments. Additionally, you'll notice on the maps that in many of the highway projects, which are going to be constructed by Caltrans and not by MTA, MTA will work with the Federal Highway Administration and Caltrans in an effort to reach an agreement to implement the CCP and the PLA on those highway projects that you see identified on those maps in front of you. So the crux of this board report you can find in Attachment B, which is page... Okay, Keith, this is where you shout out the page number to me. Page 9, thank you. Page 9 of the board report. And those are the principles that we're asking you to approve. The first principle, why are we doing this? A construction careers policy we are recommending that as a means to create jobs in our community where metro projects are being constructed to help to reduce both poverty and unemployment. We believe that a project labor agreement is advantageous to assist with training for careers in construction and also to provide for orderly settlement of disputes and grievances. The second principle is staff is recommending that the PLA apply to all of our construction projects with a life of project budget greater than $10 million. An analysis that we did provided for you in the board report shows that this will account for approximately 90% of the total funding, the total dollars that we spend on construction, and 87% of the man hours worked. The remaining 10% of the projects are much smaller in magnitude and therefore may provide additional opportunities for the small and the disadvantaged business firms who do not wish to participate on a project with a PLA. Principle number 3, at this time, FTA regulations, as Marisa just went over with you, do prohibit mandatory local preference programs where federal funds are involved with the project. We are optimistic that these regulations may be modified in the near future as Washington begins implementations of jobs programs. In the meantime, we will continue to proceed to work with the FTA and to use caution on implementing specific local hire principles on our federally funded projects. Principle number four says that we are going to negotiate what we're referring to as a master PLA. This is similar to what LA Unified did. They call theirs a PSA, as well as the CRA. So we'll negotiate the master, and then it will each contractor will be required to sign on to the principles with on each individual project with the union. So the as we get to the projects, the agreement will be between the union and the construction projects, the prime contractors. Principle number five indicates that we would like to have local hire requirements of not less than 30%, and those are tiered in the board report to say that first we will look to community area residents, residents who live within a radius of the projects where that are being built, and then once that has been exhausted, they will go to local area residents, which are all of LA County residents who live in high unemployment zip codes. And then lastly, we will also include a disadvantaged worker element in the PLA so that individuals who face barriers to improvement. The rest of the principles, so we will comply with the state of California. The unions will be the primary source of all construction labor. We are recommending that the contractors be allowed to hire one core worker for one and then one union worker for up to 10 core workers. This, again, is in response to our TBAC and small business community requests. And the rest is, you can read in the board report, it just principles 8 and 9 say that we will include all these principles that you adopt in our construction contracts.
Okay.
Concludes my report.
No, I appreciate it. Basically, what the first is a substitute motion that has been passed out, and that is the result of a lot of discussion with MTA staff, a number of the board members. That is been passed out to the members, and the mayor will move that, I believe, without putting words. We'll move that.
Can I ask for a friendly amendment? I would ask.
Let me get a second up there first for it, and I'll second it. I'll second. Yes.
The only thing I'm suggesting is that item number two, the CCP PLA, will apply to MTA
construction.
Without
objection, that. Yeah, that's good. The idea here, as Michelle was saying, we're proceeding on parallel tracks. We have the work we're doing with America Fast Forward in D.C. to try and get the flexibility because of how much money our local taxpayers have put up. And at the same time, we want to move ahead in case that is not successful and do what we can. The feds will not let you target geographically, but you can do agreements that seek to address chronic unemployment, high unemployment, and all the things that we are currently suffering from in Los Angeles, because when you've got 12% reported unemployment, we all know what it really is. It's much higher than that. So this is a policy that would stay in effect if adopted by the board, unless the federal policy changes. So either way, we're going to be able to put – we have two paths to putting more jobs based in Los Angeles, and that's the idea behind the policy. So with that – the substitute motion is what's before us.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, certainly.
Is there somebody who can describe the differences between the staff report and the substitute motion, just where the differences are?
Okay. I just got the substitute motion, but
okay,
I can
so I don't
I can
want you to
briefly.
Okay. I think the and Larry, why don't you come on down also, because you've done a lot of work on it. In addition to Michelle, do you want me to have Larry take a shot at it, or do you want?
Certainly.
It's up to you.
No, that's good.
Okay, Larry.
Since
Larry.
He's had a chance to look at it longer than I have.
Larry, come on down. We don't have the music, but come on down. Just take the mic. Monty Hall. You're too young to remember it. Larry Frank, Deputy Mayor, Los Angeles, labor issues, worker issues, unemployment issues.
So the primary difference is recognizing the limitations on the use of federal funds as it relates to the work at MTA. So as you said, $1 of federal money federalizes a project, so a large percentage of these projects will be federalized projects under the rules of the FTA and DOT.
What I need, Larry, because we have...
Want to go line by line?
No, I don't want you to go line by line because we have some members that have to leave early, and I want to make sure we get through this first. Just highlight the main differences, the main things, that the evolution from the staff report to the amendment right now.
So it talks about targeted hire as opposed to local hire, right? And targeted hire on a federalized project, Tier 1 is 200% of average unemployment.
Who sets the 200%?
So it would be set in the negotiations, but you're saying that's what in that negotiation you would like to establish.
That's not something federally that...
No.
We're choosing 200%.
This is allowing us to get more jobs in the Los Angeles region by having 200% because we actually have a pretty high unemployment rate compared to even the regions around
in
us.
The whole county. Yeah. So, okay. So, targeted
federal, federalized projects, by the way,
Larry,
200% of average unemployment.
All right, hang on one second. You had said that you had a map of the 200%.
ORHA?
And I only have the map of the 150%. So if somebody has the map of the 200%,
that should be passed out, and the list of zip codes should be passed out to everyone.
Okay.
But there are 83 zip codes that are in the 200% of average unemployment. So it's a pretty broad category. If a single census tract in a zip code has 200% of average unemployment, then that zip code is covered. It's a pretty broad, you know, cross-section of Los Angeles. Right, so Tier 2 is 150% of average unemployment, which is the way it was structured before. Right, and then we have a note saying that if it's non-federal dollars, right, what we would do is we would do high unemployment zip codes in the five-mile radius because we would like to have some recognition of the impact zone. And it also says if it's non-federal projects, the definition of high unemployment zip codes are within L.A. County. So the targeting of the at least 30% local hires are within L.A. County.
How Brett wouldn't know. I'm trying to – how credible are these statistics? It's interesting because you've got Brentwood and Bel Air that are over 200% of the average L.A. County.
I don't think that is Brentwood and Bel Air. So there's 150 in some areas, right? So these are credible statistics, and it's based on – right, a single census tract. So there's got to be a single census tract. If we want to be more narrow and base it not on zip codes, it's just that the zip code mechanism.
Because that may be. Yeah. But if a single census tract within a zip code, and I don't know how many census tracts there are in a zip code.
About 20.
Okay. But if a single census tract in that zip code of 20, give or take, that triggers that zip code.
We would be wide open. Everybody would be wide open, I think, to having it be a larger number of census tracts in a zip code being what targets this targeting process. We've been trying to be as responsive to everybody's interest as possible. But if we wanted to target it more, you know, focused,
by,
I think so that
by
would
doing,
be
by one, by,
completely
by
appropriate.
Correct. You include more zip codes that way.
Well, the only way you can do referrals from in the craft referral process is you need zip codes.
Right, but I'm saying, Larry, by going with the one census tract per zip code as opposed to 10 or 15 census
That's
tracts
correct.
Per zip code, you get more zip codes covered that way.
You get more
zip codes
covered.
More of the county.
That's correct.
You don't get a sense.
Dev, does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, it does, but this is my problem. I'm just going to... You know, logic is... surprise me here. You've got the 90077 and 90049 zip codes, which are the two per capita highest income zip codes in the world. that fall under this category, but Van Nuys isn't.
Yeah. You're not going to have too many construction workers probably in Bel Air.
Yeah, I understand that, but my point is, Larry, is that these, that statistics reminds me of my statistics professor in college who said if you have 1 foot in the freezer and 1 foot in the oven, on the average, you're comfortable.
I think it would be appropriate to have this also be subject to negotiations, and you can get exactly the targeting that you're interested
in. No. This is not a subject of negotiation. This is a subject for us to understand. And when Van Nuys doesn't fall within the 200%, above the 200% threshold, but Bel Air does, and I can't tell from this map. I happen to know that area just because of its geometric shape. But I can't tell from this map where some of these shades of gray and black shift what the boundaries are. But if that's a flaw.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know whether there's 200% of poverty in Van Nuys, or 200% of unemployment in Van Nuys or not, or whether it's 172%. But I do know this, that to exclude Van Nuys for being part of this hiring program while you include Bel Air and Brentwood is absurd. And so all I'm asking is that before we settle in on anything in percentage terms, that we understand the practical impact of what this means. I mean, how does it affect Van Nuys? How does it affect Pacoima? How does it affect Linwood? And what are the illogical
again?
That's all.
So tier one is a first look, but the 30 to 30+% of local workers comes from
second tier.
The tiers one and tier two, so it would include all of Van Nuys is part of the 30 or 30+%
Let's
workers.
Do this, Larry.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. I don't think there's any disagreement. Look, we saw the poverty numbers and the unemployment numbers in this county. The state now has more people in poverty than 33 states and 90 nations. The county leads among the highest anywhere in the state except for maybe Fresno and that San Bernardino area. So I think we all agree that we want to target the highest unemployed, the chronically unemployed, putting them back to work is critical. Advantaging our taxpayers who paid for Measure R with the half penny sales tax is essential. What we have to be able to do, though, is agree that Zev's point is a good one. You know, we want to make sure we're targeting the right communities. So maybe what we need to do is work on this targeting so it's more precise.
Yes.
Because I don't think anybody has a problem with the 200% and the 150, those two. That's important. That's strategic investments. But we got to do it right. I mean, because otherwise then it undermines the efficacy of the program. So can we, I'd like to suggest maybe having staff work it within the next week so that we can really have, I mean, nobody's going to be against it. Why would anybody be against it? But, you know, Van Nuys is probably the 200%.
I got to believe there's
block by block
census tract in the San Fernando Valley outside of Pacoima. Yep. In San Fernando.
So let's work
for me to defend it because I didn't do the staff work and I just saw the maps this morning too. But I will. I think we need to
make the suggestions. I think just along the mayor's lines that assuming this moves forward between today and the board meeting, this gets tightened up and we get a better understanding because as Zev and the mayor said, in order to know where the percentages are, what they cover and don't cover, and use the most recent data, and we'll take a look at the maps. But. Yeah. Okay, so that's something we can work on with MTA staff if this moves forward. So
a couple other changes?
Yeah.
So I think one of the issues that should wrestle with is the staff report talks about a $10 million threshold. I don't think there's any project labor agreements in the country that have a $10 million threshold. It puts about 12% of the work outside of a local hire environment. We'd like to get more local hire on that work if we can. In the city, we have what's equivalent to about a $3 million threshold. LUSD has a $250,000 threshold. I think it's a subject of negotiation, and it's up to the agency to be able to get the best deal that they want.
Actually, how they let me make a suggestion. I'm sorry, Diane. Please.
Are you saying the $10 million is too high?
It's probably a non-starter in the negotiations. It hasn't been negotiated anywhere else, but it would possibly, if that's the goal, that becomes part of the agency's goal in the negotiations.
Make a suggestion along that line also, just
in negotiations.
Let me make a suggestion along that line, that as a friendly amendment to the maker of the motion, that rather than have the $10 million number in there, because I do believe that's policy, I think there's negotiation and there's policy in setting this. And I hear what everybody's saying about the 10 being too high. I think what we ought to say is that there's going to be a threshold between 2.5 and 5 million subject to negotiation. They can negotiate in there between 2.5 and 5, but that way we know that there's at least some of it that's carved out. And that way, I think it's a reasonable number, and we'll let them negotiate where and within that number. So,
where's the $10 million? Is that in the staff report?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, any other changes?
And it just makes disadvantaged worker subject to also the negotiation. The definition of disadvantaged worker is the other major change.
And the other major change is I don't see in the, unless I'm missing it, in the substitute motion, the allowance for core workers.
Again, core workers is subject to negotiations.
Well.
The number of core workers?
Number of core workers, which is the way it is.
I thought we were going to use the Expo PLA as the template. Why don't we just assert that? I mean, that wasn't the floor of a future negotiation. The whole purpose of the Expo, one of the whole purposes of the Expo negotiation, which went on for months, was that it was going to be the template for what we were going to do here.
Supervisor, the reason that we have varied slightly from the Expo is that applies solely to one project, and we are doing a master PLA that will apply to all of our projects.
How does it differ?
We went with the county's model for the hospital, which allows 10 core workers, and that, again, is...
What did Expo allow?
Five. Primarily when it's a single project PLA, it's five core workers to five union workers, and then all the rest are union workers. Again, this was at the request of our TBAC and our small businesses, if they could have more of their workers be a part of the project. TBAC is the Transportation Business Advisory Council. It's our small and disadvantaged.
So your recommendation on 10 is for this, for our PLA?
Yes.
10 core workers was responsive to...
It was an attempt to...
For the county, what the county does.
Ameliorate some of what they felt were the negative impacts of a PLA by allowing them to have more of their core workers participate on the project.
All right. Thank you.
And in addition to the county, one other agency has 10. And who's that? Remind me. Okay.
Marco, I think we should be consistent with what we've done on the Expo line. I think to the extent that we are, big pardon?
Five.
Expo's five. And
I thought Expo 10. Was 10. Are you sure it was 5?
Possibly.
Yes.
You're right. We'll clarify that, but along that line to see what Expo's doing. And
it's 10, one from the hiring hall, one from the core, one from the hiring hall to get to 10.
Right, and that's...
That would be five core workers.
Right.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Diane. I'm concerned. I talked to the gentleman from the union some time ago, and he presented a very, very wonderful picture. I also reached out to some businesses, and I'm concerned that we not follow the pattern that our state seems to be following in trying to get rid of businesses. So I would lobby, if you will, for the 10 so that there are small businesses that can keep employing folks that they have employed while they bring the union folks in as well. I don't think we want to cause people to go elsewhere to apply their trade.
Right.
Maybe what we could do is do the same thing that you did with the 2.5 to 5, do a range, 5 to 10. Look at that as a
negotiation.
Negotiation.
So the board's setting a broader policy.
We'll set the band, and then they can negotiate something in between.
That's fine.
So just so I understand, the difference between Expo and what you proposed here, when you say five, it's 10 all totaled, five of which
no.
are at Expo, it's five of which are the
core.
Core, thanks. And what you are proposing is 10 and 10. So
right.
20, really.
So of the first 20 workers, 10 would be union and 10 would be the...
I understand that. I just didn't understand.
Contractors.
I think the mayor's...
Core workers.
And we'll do that as a friendly amendment also. The... part of what we're trying to do here, obviously, is to deal with unemployment in L.A., but also let's remember that this only applies to construction contracts. It does not apply to architects, engineering, and a lot of the work the small businesses and TBAC actually would do on jobs like this. It only applies on the construction side. So, I mean, that's an important distinction. And we'll do the 5 to 10 employee parameter, as we discussed, and we'll work on the maps, as we discussed, and the one other point the mayor had raised. And you, 2.5 to 5. The 2.5 to 5 on the
threshold.
So those are all friendly amendments to the substitute motion on that.
Okay. I have one more question.
One more, okay.
On a different part of this. On page 2.
Larry, hang on. Don't go
Larry,
far.
Larry, yeah. On the bottom of number 5, just before you get to number 6, on non-federally funded projects, the first tier shall be high unemployment zip codes within 5 miles of the construction site. That differs from the Expo, didn't it, which is a non-federal project. Was an Expo 5 miles is the first, and then you go to the zip codes?
Yes.
Why are you guys changing this?
Larry?
The reason, I believe, is because that on federally funded projects, we aren't... the federal regulations right now will allow us...
Talking about the federally funded. I'm talking about the non-federally funded, that one paragraph at the end. That's the only thing I'm focused on.
Okay. And what's your question again, sir?
Let Larry answer it, because I think he drafted, helped draft this.
Are we asking about why the Expo line has a radius?
No, I'm asking why this differs from the way the Expo line was for as a non-federal project. Expo has the threshold, the first tier is... anybody within the 5 mile radius or corridor, whatever it is, and then if you need more, then you go to the zip codes, the high unemployment zip codes. You are saying that the first tier would be unemployment, high unemployment zip codes within 5 miles of the construction site.
A non-federally funded project, the same as Expo would apply, which is that it's a 5 mile radius is tier one, and then it's high unemployment zip codes.
That's not what this says. This says the first tier shall be high unemployment zip codes within 5 miles of the construction. So you've married those two concepts.
Is, you know, quite honestly, any kind of geographic targeting, even in a non-federal project, your goals need to be addressing unemployment and addressing poverty. If your goal is just to get baldly get work for LA, there are some vulnerabilities to that. And so to focus on the high unemployment zip codes within that 5 mile radius is, in fact, a protected strategy.
Protected from what?
From federal.
But these are non-federal projects.
Yeah, but there are constitutional issues that would apply.
Then how did we get away with it at Expo?
We should talk offline.
Okay, well, rather... rather than imply that that Expo is going ahead with something inappropriate, I think that what Expo is doing is what the Department of Labor likes to see in project labor agreements. DOT has a slightly different view of that, but DOT ironically encourages PLAs, but labor actually looks at what's in the PLAs. I think that's part of how Expo is moving along, so build it quick before somebody figures it out.
Can I propose, too, that when... this was formulated for Expo. The unemployment picture was much different than it is today.
Yeah, it was pretty close to it.
It was on its way last year.
But it doesn't seem to be diminishing. So this gives us an opportunity to help everybody in the county as opposed to those just close.
All right. Other questions from members?
And just one on this point. So assuming this is the threshold, what happens when is what's the second tier for a non-federally funded project?
Second tier for non-federally would be the 150% of average unemployment, and it describes it in the definition section at the end, where it says it's high on 150% of average unemployment within L.A. County, and it limits it to L.A. County in terms of your targeting.
And on the first tier should be high unemployment zip codes. Those are what, 150%?
150%, and that's defined in the definition section at the very end.
So this is 150%, and the other thing was 200%.
That's correct.
What?
Correct. Because it gives you the more highly targeting, the five-mile radius gives you the higher targeting, which we're hoping to do, affecting the impact zone on non-federal projects.
Well, let's say you're talking about the 405 light rail project, okay, which is a long way off, but just for the sake of argument. It goes through a large swath of communities within the five-mile radius that don't have even 150% of unemployment, above the unemployment rate average. How does that target?
That would be part of the 70%, not part of the 30% or 30-plus percent. It wouldn't be targeted, but there would still be dispatch from those areas. It just wouldn't be targeted if it's not high unemployment areas of the city. Now, if that's the point, because, again, the policy needs to address our goals of addressing unemployment and poverty, right? That's what the targeted.
I think the key is going to be, though, Zev has made an important point, and that is the key is going to be that we have data that supports the targeting of specific areas. And that's what we're going to have to make. Because otherwise, I mean, nobody disagrees that we should be targeting at 200%, you know, focus priority there, then the 150, and then everybody else. But, I mean, that's good public policy. But we've got to know that, in fact, the places we're targeting are actually those places of the extremely high unemployment and then high unemployment. So that's going to be the key, Larry, and we're all going to have to make sure that part is tight, because then I don't think anybody has an issue with this.
Again, this affects, you know, the next 5 years of construction. There'll be a new PLA negotiated for the following 5 years, and the 405 light rail would be in that new PLA, and that's where it would maybe be addressed.
Okay.
All right.
Chairman, I'm just going to make one last comment, because
sure.
I know you want to get on to the hearing. With all due respect to my friend, I'm not there on the 200% thing, because I'm prepared to be persuaded otherwise, but an unemployed person is an unemployed person, whether he lives in a zip code that is 200% above the average or 150% above the average. And when you look at the maps of the people of the zip codes that are in the 150% above the average unemployment, which is this, it pretty much covers the poverty areas of our town, but it's a broader swath of our region. And it just seems to me to defies a bit of logic to exclude people who are unemployed and chronically unemployed in communities where the average may be 151% and not 200%, but they're still chronically unemployed, and they'll be excluded from this sweep.
Actually, they won't be. The point here is, in the first tier, there's a first tier and a second tier, and then there's 70% of the rest. So you hit it right on the head. Those people will be able to apply for the first tier, second tier, and the 70%.
You make a good point.
So that's the only point that we're making. But the key is, what Zev has mentioned is absolutely hits it right on the point. We got to make sure that the targeting is something that everybody agrees on. That's the key, because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
In Public Works,
Larry, hang on a second.
Example.
Larry, hang on a second. Sorry.
We've identified in the board report the county of Los Angeles, in an effort to focus in on this very issue, has identified an alternate methodology called Bank Enterprise Award Areas.
And these areas include underserved communities that have been identified by the community development financial institutions. A good example of this is the city of Altadena. Altadena is one zip code, and it is not a high unemployment zip code, but if you are familiar with Altadena, you know that there are many poverty and unemployed areas in Altadena. So the way the county has addressed this is to say, we'll look at the high unemployment zip codes, we'll look at also these bank enterprise or BIA areas where there may be high unemployment within a zip code that is not otherwise identified. So that is an alternative we have laid out for you.
Well, and maybe as we look at finding agreement on where these areas are, we can take that methodology into account too. Because I think what we all want to do is be as pinpoint in our targeting of these areas. Because we, and so if that is okay with the rest of the folks, why don't we include that as a possible second way to overlay to be able to target these areas. And there may be others. It shouldn't be, to be honest, rocket science. There's got to be a way to target these places more precisely. And I think that's the director's
code based ultimately.
Right, well, that's something we can work on during the next week as we
refine. You make sure you work with my staff on that?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Diane? I'm looking at a document here that was put together for me when we started at the PLAs, and it's Economic Development Department information on employment rates in June 2011. And you can get a rate of a percentage point. We're showing Florence Graham unincorporated at 24.2%. That's terrible. I mean, you know, and others that are that high. There are others that are lower, but I certainly think that the information is available.
That's right.
And we can
figure it out.
Yeah.
All right.
Can't be that difficult.
Okay.
Can we move the motion?
Well, we've got a public. Yeah.
Are all these people supporting?
Well, here's what we're going to do.
Are these people supporting?
Yeah. Here's what I've asked. Shamari, if you'd come down on behalf of Robbie, on behalf of the building trades, IBEW. Oh, I didn't see it. Robbie, why don't you come down? Why doesn't all the building trades, the iron workers, the IBW folks that are here in support, why don't you guys all stand? Because that would be... Thank you. Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Robbie? Robbie in support?
Yes. Well, this Project Labor Agreement, we were large supporters of Measure R, and we saw it not only as an opportunity we sit on the freeways just like everybody else. Many of the guys here had mothers who worked in Ambassador Hotel and other places, raising three kids, keeping an old car on the road, $3,000 a year. That money can go to the personal wealth of any working family here in Los Angeles. Instead of having two cars, they can have one. Our guys can put the tools on their shoulders and ride the metro in. And then there's a question of jobs. I mean, the L.A. County voters voted a half-cent sales tax on themselves for to make a better environment, but it also we made a commitment that we would do as many county workers from the L.A. County on these projects as possible, people with the skills to make sure the job comes in on time, on their budget. And we would do that through an agreement. It's only through a project labor agreement that we can bypass our hiring procedures and put people in bigger numbers from the zip codes on the project. It will still be the lowest bidder. It does not change, really, the contractors or the workforce on there. It simply allows the hiring halls to bypass our hiring procedure to put more county residents on the project with preference. It will also give direct access to county residents, the apprenticeship programs. Many of the apprenticeship programs have 3,000 or 4,000 people on their waiting list because they are very good jobs. If you're a zip code resident and they call in for an electrician or a painter from the zip code and there's none at the union hall, then someone from the community, from the zip codes, will get direct access into the apprenticeship program.
All right.
That's the Project Labor Agreement.
Robbie, thank you very much. All right. Thank you, guys. All right. Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the time to be here. I appreciate that. I'm trying to move through the public comment because we have a couple of members with conflicts because this committee normally doesn't go this long. So anyone, the rest, I've got Morgan Wainan, Morgan from NRDC. Anybody who wants to say me too, that would be great. Ryan, you're up next. Ryan from T for America.
Good morning. My name is Morgan Wyan. I'm an attorney with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and I'm here to express our support for this proposed policy. Just to point out from an environmental perspective, local hire means you need to travel less to commute to work, which means less vehicle miles traveled and a greater likelihood of using public transit or walking and biking, reducing emissions in an area that faces air pollution challenges. So thank you, and we strongly support.
Thanks, Ryan. And I'm sorry, Rena Fukada is next. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, but if you could be on deck, that would be great.
Good morning, Ryan Wiggins from Transportation for America. We're a national advocacy organization working on federal transportation policy and the reauthorization bill. We oftentimes look to Los Angeles for innovative ideas such as America Fast Forward and other issues that we can hold up as examples on the federal level to go ahead and push strong policy. In this case, we see cities as a long-term driver of economic growth, and transit systems and putting those and expanding them into cities is going to help those cities economically grow, but as well we want to make sure that those jobs are in those cities as well, and they're good jobs, well-paying jobs, and provide career ladders for those citizens to move up and create a life and expand the tax base. Thank you very much.
Ryan, thank you. By the way, I should mention, right now I have the votes to pass it. The longer we keep talking, that may not be true, but Rena, so.
Hi, good morning. My name is Rena Fukuda, and I'm a community organizer from East LA Community Corporation. And I'm here representing our Boyle Heights residents. We're about 1,300 members, and we believe in equitable and accountable development that mitigate displacement and require local hire, and not only for metro construction, but also for its joint development projects. We'd like to see a transparent process in the statistics of local hire that's more clear and that show real change in unemployment in low-income communities such as Boyle Heights and South Los Angeles. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Owen Smith, and where's Owen Smith? And Mr. Smith, while you're coming down, I've got three people representing Black Worker Center. If one of you could speak for all three, that would help us, please. And that either Eric, Lola, or Madeline. And Owen.
My name is Owen Smith. I'm a painting contractor. My company is called Anzalone & Associates, Inc. I've been a contractor in Los Angeles since 1960. I was a subcontractor for RTD, SCRTD, and then MTA. I worked on the Green Line, the Blue Line, and the entire Red Line, both the tunnels and the stations. I support project labor agreements because I think they provide upward mobility for workers and business people. Project labor agreements are beneficial for Los Angeles County in general. They provide stable wages, good working conditions, and no work stoppage. In my time as a contractor, I have employed a lot of people. I have over 200 painters in my database. I can tell you that there are a lot of people out of work because I get a lot of calls, and I just can't put everybody to work myself. I'm asking you to support the project labor agreements for the MTA projects and bring good jobs to the Los Angeles residents. Thank you.
You very much, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to apologize. I'm supporting this as amended, but I have to be at an event that's been long scheduled, and I apologize for leaving, but you have my proxy, if it doesn't change, to support this, and I apologize to the people in the audience, but I think a lot of good work has been done on this.
Okay. All right.
Hi, I'm Lola Cuevas, coordinator with the Los Angeles Black Worker Center, and we want to just congratulate this committee for reviewing this item. We support the creation of these good jobs in our community. We support the targeted hiring recommendation. We support also that the MTA board be very mindful that right now 19.3% of the African American community metropolitan region is currently unemployed. There's another estimated 10% of discouraged workers who are not even reported in those numbers. This item means good jobs for our community. But we also know there's a big gap in terms of representation of African-American workers in the construction industry, and we ask that this Please committee recommend to the board that the principles include language that supports strong and strict adherence to anti-discrimination policies that are set forth by Title VII and Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And with that, we support this and hope that it moves forward. Thank you.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. And please keep up the good work that you guys do at the center. Other comments? Any other public comment? Opposition? I've got a motion and a second as amended. I need the mayor, please. The substitute motion as amended is what's before us to go to the board. And the secretary will call the roll, please, slowly. For both of us. Great. How'd you like to be on EMAC for an hour?
Yes.
K-A-T-Z. Nah, let's not do that. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. No. Yeah. But we're going to put the hold on that or a call on that, for lack of a better word, until the other member gets here.
Or we can move. Can I borrow your book for 1 second?
Thank you. All right. Then that motion passes 3-0 and goes to the full board as it was amended in the substitute motion. So that is done. Thank you. And by the way, hang on a second. I want to, before, please, I especially want to thank the MTA staff and for all the work that has gone into this. We have some more work to do, but you guys did an amazing job in working with some of the advocates in shaping this policy. So thank you very much for all of that, Michelle, and your team, and Linda. Okay, thank you. All right. Next item is item 33. It's a budget amendment. Do a budget amendment. Well, let's see. What happens if these two things? Okay, just pass them to the full board. We'll just.
Oh, the low,
the low sand piece can go before the board also, because we haven't done that yet. And the closed session stuff, we'll just defer to the board. We'll refer to that to the board also. So, closed session, I'm sorry. All the items that we've not dealt with will go to the full board, and the closed session items will roll over to the full board as well. Thank you guys for being ready. And with that, we'll adjourn this committee so the next committee can step in. Thank you.